You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
It's the Cooligans, stupid.
Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco. I am here with a special guest co-host because Alexis is away at the moment. He is currently shaping up plans to go to Turkey. Our producer just did this is the universal symbol for a person who is about to get some hair transplants. But no, Alexis is going to Istanbul for the Champions League final. We'll get word from him throughout the week while he's out there and see how his hairline is coming along, obviously. But we have a special guest co-host today. I'm excited to have him join us.
Use your words, Christian.
You're the writer, not me, bro. Yeah. From The Athletic, he was over the weekend, he was in North Carolina, in Cary, North Carolina, watching the TST, the soccer tournament, with the $1 million prize that was on the line. It was an incredible weekend. He was out there covering everything. So we'll get some recaps on how that went. But please welcome Pablo Maurer of The Athletic. Pablo, what's up, man?
Not much. Just recovering from a grade 4 sunburn. I've got that post-youth soccer tournament glow, used to get when you were a kid, where you just bake out there without sunscreen for four days.
Yeah, yeah, that post-youth soccer glow, that's you spent a lot of time calming your parents down to stop yelling at the referees.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of that.
We may have had a different childhood experience. I don't know.
But no, man. Speaking of your sunburn, this was one of the first things I thought when I heard about TST. It was obviously a really we've seen the basketball tournament, and this is obviously related to that. But the fact that it was played in North Carolina in June,
yes,
it's not. And then some of these games were peak sun times when it's at 2-3 p.m. I've played games in 85-90 degree weather. It's pretty challenging. What was just the even for the fans, it's very, very hot. How was just the general feeling, especially during those day games?
I mean, it was – luckily, it wasn't in the 90s, but and the tournament organizers very smartly took a break between I want to say there were no games between 3:30 or 4 and 7. So that was, I think, obviously calculated. Okay, yeah. Not a lot of shade at that facility, especially not on the four fields that were – completely and totally unshaded, but it went off well, man. I mean, it was nice. It was the 70s and cloudy yesterday, which was a nice change of pace. But, this body's not built for heat. So.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the tournament itself. If anyone's not aware, TST, a 7v7 tournament where it was $1 million on the line. And it was interesting because obviously us being in the soccer bubble, we can't go a day without thinking or talking about this sport. But there were a lot of people I saw online that were I didn't even know this was happening. But it was I was very much waiting for it. But the sort of general you were tweeting a lot about it, about how awesome it was. Can you go into any more detail? What made it so damn cool?
Yeah, man. I mean, I feel like the concept, first of all, I mean, they like to say they sort of, 7v7 exists in other parts of the world. You have Hong Kong Sevens, which is a little bit different, but this is really pretty much a brand new sport. I mean, it's played for the uninitiated here. It's played on a condensed field. I want to say it's 60 by 40, 60 long, 40 wide.
So Yankee Stadium Museum?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right. Exactly. City Field, Yankee Stadium dimensions. the goals are a little smaller, they're shorter, like they're squatter and they're a little bit narrower. And there's all kinds of oddball rules. I mean, it's seven a side, but you know, the strangest one and the one that came off to greatest effect was they play two 20-minute halves. At the end of the game, no matter what the score is, it becomes next goal. It becomes, you know, like the target score is one goal additional to what the leading team has. So if the game ends 4-1, it becomes a game to five. And, you know, it's like you think, well, you know, so basically the team that's down 4-1 could score four goals in a row and win the game.
Right.
And you wouldn't think it happened very much, but I mean, it happened like repeatedly. It happened this weekend. Three, four times there were teams that blew three goal leads in what's called target score time. The other wrinkle about that is every 5 minutes of target score time, they pull a player off the field from each team. And again, you'd think it's like, oh, it's never going to get below like 6v6 or 5v5. Dude, one of the games went 2-on-2, right? which is ridiculous. And I actually witnessed the tournament organizers had not thought about what they would do if it got to 1v1. The problem
goalie versus goalie or something
is you can't kick or throw the ball into yourself, right? So it would have just like entered into some endless feedback loop where the game was... So basically, they decided on the fly was if it goes 2v2, it stays 2v2, and if one team gets a red card, it would go 3v2. They would add a player, so as you said.
Ah.
Yeah, it was dope, man. I was extremely entertained for multiple days in a row.
So it's obviously different watching it on television versus being on the ground there, because even while I was watching, the mics picked up. There was some trash talk. There was a couple of things I heard, you know, that you don't necessarily you expect to hear it in a Sunday league game. Yep. But you know, there's usually not $1 million on the line when my local beer league has some games going on.
Yeah.
But this was this captured something, and I saw that you there were a couple of things. You got the game winning ball.
Hold on a second.
Oh, let's see it.
You got it right here.
All right. The game-winning ball, the TST ball. Yeah. A Mitre?
It's Ultimax. It's Ultimax. It's a nice ball. It's a $130 ball.
Okay.
So they did a deal with Mitre where they, or like Mitre, as us white people say, where they like got, I think, 300 of these from them, you know, sponsorship thing. And then the last day, they were just chucking these into the fucking stands. Excuse me. It was like, you know, I clearly are not going to reuse them. But I was just like, this is like a good, you know what I mean? Like, this would never happen in an MLS game. They'd be chucking out the replicas, you know, but
this is
the real deal. I got one for myself, too. More importantly, yesterday, after everybody left, Felipe and I wandered over to the sort of accommodations for athletes, which I would describe as like it's like marginally nicer fire festival. okay. And there was just
Ja Rule's stuff, there,
strewn,
so
stuff cool. strewn everywhere. Like teams just left stuff there, right? I mean, like this right here is a Steven Lenhardt Sneaky Fox FC jersey.
Yeah.
And I didn't just get one. I got the home and the away kit here. Steven or Mike McGee, if you guys want your gear back, Venmo me. We got
some classics. I mean, they're obviously legendary players in Major League Soccer. I saw, obviously, Jimmy Conrad has, you know, Conrad and Beasley United, and they ended up losing to Sneaky Fox. It was just, that was one of the big games of, you know, players who've both been on our show. Mike McGee, who is the owner of Sneaky Fox Vodka, right? Is that what it is? Vodka? Mm-hmm. And obviously Jimmy Conrad, who's a friend. So it was a very difficult matchup for me because, you know, obviously care about both of them deeply. And you don't know. It's like rooting for your kids who are playing against each other, okay?
Yeah, I mean, it was they're on my ring light. So it was... I look marginally more sunburned now. So... There was a lot of like there. Obviously, there was a ton of dudes. There was, you know, Dempsey had a team. Donovan was supposed to show up but didn't. Sneaky Fox obviously had a team. They had a whole. I mean, they had a bunch of dudes who didn't play because they got injured, like Demerit and Alan Gordon. But they had guys like Lenhardt. You know, D Rowe was on Jimmy's team. Jermaine Jones.
D Rowe was balling, bro.
Bro, yeah.
D Rowe was
class.
Great.
That's class, you know. It's like that never goes away. You know what I mean? Like, Felipe and I saw him, Felipe Cardenas, my colleague who covered it with me, saw D-Row on the first day after the training session, just barefoot, shirtless, just walks up to a ball in the field as he's leaving it and just hammers like a 20-yard shot upper 90 into this tiny goal with no shoes on, like it's nothing, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it was really good. We were also like the only writers there. Kyle Bonagura, a great dude, was there from ESPN, but wasn't covered very thoroughly this year. I suspect that might change going forward, but who knows?
Yeah. And then the winning team was a Newtown Pride or mm-hmm. something. Newtown Pride ended up winning in a spectacular fashion. But I wonder, if you spoke to anybody from the team,
yeah,
or anything, because I saw they put out a long Twitter thread, and obviously Newtown was the town that suffered the Sandy Hook shooting, and
yeah.
they really did highlight, like, you know, that changed a lot of their lives, experiencing that in their community. But I don't know if you spoke to anybody just on what it sort of meant for them to win that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't touch a ton on the Sandy Hook stuff. I know it's funny because a lot of these teams, I mean, they're from Newtown, but I mean, 2/3 of the team are like ringers, right? They'd be like guys from the Major Arena Soccer League or futsal guys from Brazil. And every team was like this. They obviously have a few local dudes, but, you know, they want to like stack it with talent. But I mean, to me, the crazier takeaway was like, you know, I think their winning share, Felipe and I wrote it in a story the other day. Going to end up being like 20 G's a player, which, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and they said something like, man, that's crazy because you think $1 million, but like that's not like life-changing money. And I was like, dude, 20 G's, like a lot of people pay off all their debt with that. Or like this MSL player who might make that in a year, you know what I mean? Like it's crazy money. I do think one of the guys, though, who we talked to, Felipe, was like, you know, what are you going to do with the money? And the guy just went straight to Miami. That's what he said. So I think some players maybe it was like life changing, and how many, women of the night they were going to get that weekend or something. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, they're like, you know, Vegas exists. So
yeah, exactly. Just go ahead and have the greatest weekend of my entire life.
The other thing that was obviously, I think, marred the competition a little bit, especially on the first day, was I don't remember the initial team, but I know it was targeted to. There was a racial, some sort of racial abuse targeted at a West Ham United.
Dallas United was the other team. Club team from Dallas, yeah.
Right, and it obviously was. I think it was handled well and swiftly, where the team was removed from the competition. But it definitely was not the way they clearly wanted to start off this tournament.
I mean, dude, like, we know this issue is inescapable, right? But I mean, when I say that, it didn't even cross my mind that this could happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's
same
just
here,
not.
Man.
Yeah, and so like, I was standing there with Felipe, or we were just sitting in the stands at some point, and, you know, play stopped, and it just stopped for like 10, 15 minutes. And it dawned on me, because, you know, last time that happened, we're just like, what's going on? You know, teams are talking to the ref. And it dawned on me, you know, I was covering the DC United game where Taxi Funtas, you know, was alleged to have said something to an Inter-Miami player. And it was the same thing where after 8 or 9 minutes of coaches talking to each other, you're like, oh, my God, I understand what's happening here. And I had that thought for like half a second, but I was just like, no, come on. Like at at TST on the first day of TST, we can't make it one day at a fake ass tournament without a race riot or something like that. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, but no, I mean, props to the organizers, man. You heard, you know, Anton Ferdinand, West Ham, the next day was just like, they, you know, they could not have responded to this better. They nipped it in the bud. You know, they sent the, you know, I think he actually said something like, some of the major leagues in Europe could sort of like take some lessons from how this was handled here. Obviously, totally different setup, but you know, I was relieved even as a journalist that it was dealt with that way, so that I could report that and that we could, you know, move on with the tournament in some way and sort of focus on it as a whole without that being the central storyline. You know, it's like the reason it didn't end up being the central storyline isn't because it was forgotten or something. It's because the punishment was immediate and severe, and that's that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah. Great work. You're out of the tournament. You know?
Right. Like, and you would think Spain would do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Start docking points. You know, start whatever.
We talk about it more because of how poorly it's handled. And maybe I haven't spoken to you about this. And obviously you are of Spanish descendants. And I don't know how much day in day out you're watching La Liga. But obviously this is such a huge story with everything going on with Vinicius. And before I even ask the very generic question about like what should they do about this or whatever, because it's like obvious, but what do you think of, I don't know if you've seen this online, it's popping up on my TikTok a lot, mm-hmm. where black people from Spain or non-white people from Spain do this sort of trend, because was it the president where he was like, España no es racista, right? Yeah, Spain is not racist and blah, blah, blah. And they do the same thing. They start every sentence with Spain is not racist, but, I get profiled whenever I walk into a store. Spain is not racist, but, Christian, they just list.
I'm going to tell you something. Like, I lived there for 2 years when I was 14 and 15. And my family there, a year and a half or so, my family there, really fortunately for me, they got me a socio card to Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, both teams. So it's like a season pass, right? You're like a member of the club. So I went to like dozens of games there in the mid 90s. And my dad, I talked to my dad about the Vinicius stuff. He called. It's one of those things where my parents aren't huge soccer fans, but like, when you get the phone call where like soccer occasionally breaks into the public consciousness, you're like, I read this article, And sometimes it's like something nice, and sometimes it's like they're like hanging this person in effigy or whatever. Like, yes, this is ridiculous, But he said, I remember when you were 14, you called me from Spain, and you told me that all the fans that made monkey noises. I mean, like I was at the Santiago Bernabéu, like Real Madrid's at the time massive 110,000 seat stadium, no seats in the lower bowl. I mean, it was crazy. And I remember at 14, and I moved there from Nashville, Tennessee, which really, if I'm being honest, at the time wasn't the most diverse place. And I'm looking around the stadium and I just genuinely remember seeing like 109,999 white faces and being like, this is wild. I've never, so like that element has existed forever in Spain. Spain is to this day, close to my heart, obviously. My family's from, I go back, but it's a low key. It can be a very xenophobic place, man. They have all the dynamics with immigrants from Africa and stuff like that. It's been going on for decades, dude. Like, this is nothing new, I was not surprised by any of this. And like, La Liga has been terrible about this for years.
Yeah.
And it's other leagues try at least. Like, they haven't really tried.
There's just I think my producer just said something about this. They're doing like a say no to racism game or charity game, and it's just like
that'll work. Yeah. we can move on to the next topic then, because racism is over, right? Like, thank you them again, and Kendall Jenner or whatever, whoever else you want to handle it wants to here.
Wrap it up.
Right. David Guetta, he did his part to end it.
Obviously, the iconic heroes, the freedom fighters themselves, those civil rights leaders.
The Holy Trinity, Kendall Jenner, David Guetta, and whoever plays in that charity match.
It's surreal, man, and it's a thing where so that's why the incident at TST, the fact that it could have really made this tournament very ugly if it was handled in any other way, it's just like, why can't these leagues do something similar
I don't think the organizers even knew this, but the West Anton Ferdinand, he in his remarks the other day, which were kind of incredible, which again we've already reported this, like he said that almost every other team in the tournament was like, if you leave, we'll leave with you. Like, if you feel like this wasn't dealt with properly. So there was a lot of like allyship from people. That also is a huge thing. I mean, like I don't really know that exists in MLS or in La Liga or wherever. I mean, I think most people just want to like, if we're not involved in this, we're staying away from it. You know what I mean? Whatever. Again, I mean, we can't really compare what La Liga does to what TST does, but at the same time, why not? I mean, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Because even just the handling of the situation, it's For whatever reason, it's like comforting that like it was taken seriously.
Yeah.
There was a gathering of support to do what's right. So we all the whole point is like we know what the right thing is to do. We all know, and it's just a matter of who's courageous enough to make those decisions. So well,
like a small aside about it too. I mean, like the other thing that made it really work, you know, the way they handled it was. They were, you know, the organizers at TST were open with the media about it on the ground, what was happening. They got me, you know, a few other people, a decision within a couple hours. They said, we'll get you West Ham players. We'll, you know, whatever you need. And I mean, that doesn't exist in MLS or in other places right. either, you know? So again, it's like those things, you know, contribute to this just being something where most fans on Twitter are like, oh. Okay, see you later. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No one was really talking about it. It happened Friday. No one was really talking about it on Saturday.
Fans don't expect racism not to exist. They expect it to be dealt with swiftly and like people to really effort to eradicate it from the game. And like that's what happened here. You know, so,
well put. Okay. Yeah. I want to move on to a couple other things because...
what's the next extremely light topic we're going to talk about? You want to do more policy next? Or?
Super chill. speaking of course, light. No, I'll do that in a second. But Phil Neville. Mm. He was let go by Inter Miami, and the reason I want to talk about this in particular, and I'm glad you're here, is because you have a little bit of a history, a background with Phil Neville. We can go into a little bit, but I just want to talk about his firing, his sacking, as they say for our European listeners. Phil Neville was there about 2.5 years. I think a lot of people thought his hiring was a little nepotism kind of thing, but it is what it is.
Hired by his best friend, and his son was signed by the same team. You think there might be something going on there?
Well, it is what it is. But then, you know, I don't think it was Phil Neville's fault. But then, obviously, the issues with Blaise Matuidi and getting, breaking the financial rules in Major League Soccer led to Inter Miami dealing with a penalty where they weren't able to transfer players that they wanted. They had to trade away or sell players that they probably would have wanted to keep. So he was in a tough position, even though he got them to the playoffs last year. But this time around, it feels like the expectations are a little bit higher for Inter Miami. So what do you think about his tenure so far, you know, while he was at Inter Miami?
Yeah, I mean, both things can be true here. What you just said is absolutely true. He was handed a pretty difficult deck of cards to play with. I hate to promote my colleague's work, but Jeff Reuter did a great kind of data dive on Neville's.
I hate
Miami
to promote
tenure.
His work too, man. No,
he was like, yeah, exactly. his tenure there was like an unqualified failure. I mean, like he's given like this deck of cards and underperformed even considering that, you know. I think to fans, I mean, I'm not a Miami fan. I don't cover that market, but you can kind of tell that. I mean, like his. His public remarks, he always felt very much full of excuses or extremely positive, and fans don't F with that, whatever you want to say. You know what I mean? It's like they'd much rather you just be like, we're terrible and we're, you know. and then, you know, the other thing is you have the whole specter of like Lionel Messi hovering over this whole thing where it's like they're terrible, but they might theoretically get Messi for the second half of the year or next year. And then would he even play for Phil Neville? And, you know, it was just like, you know, you asked it, you said I have some history with him. I'll tell a story real quick. Cause it like, to me, Felipe and I did a 1 hour long kind of sit down with him before the year. And I found him to be so engaging and like refreshingly honest, and he like ethered MLS for the playoff restructuring. He ethered them for the, you know, for sort of like, I think when he said, you know, he referred to Apple and MLS's relationship as the tail wagging the dog because of that. And he said, you know, Apple obviously wants more inventory, so that's why there's more playoff games. That's why more teams make it. All this stuff, a fantastic interview, right? And, you know, my understanding is that Jorge Mas at the club, one of the Mas brothers, one of the owners, got pretty upset at some of the stuff Phil said, specifically about Apple. Obviously, it was like right around the launch of the deal, and this is like MLS's cash cow and their new thing. So it became a huge thing where, you know, within a day or something like that, the team had like disinvited Felipe and I to their media game and like banned Felipe from a training session. I mean, it was just like, it was preposterous. Like, I don't even know how to, like, what else can I even say about that? You know, I mean, I was like, there was certainly part of me that was like, hey, you know, like we got sent down here to do this Miami coverage and we, you know, logistically we need access. But there was also part of me that was just like, this is just hilarious, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, like, no, first of all, we're going to play in the media, like media game. Like, you can barely even walk. You know what I mean? Like, so that was my, I mean, that's my lasting memory of Phil Neville. But I don't suspect he had much to do with that. I think he just
to personally make sure that you weren't.
I don't think that was his call. I just think he spoke his mind and gave refreshingly honest answers that I wish more MLS head coaches would do. But they're scared of stuff like this.
Yeah,
and that was that. I mean, I wish him the best. I got no. I'm not Franco. He didn't yell at me.
You know, yeah. I want to get to Franco Panizo,
yeah.
who asked him the question. I don't know if people saw this recently, but Phil Neville in his that wasn't his last interview. I think it was
two. It was like two. Well, the one two. His next to last post game press conference.
Yeah, where he obviously was upset that he Franco asked a question. And I guess he slightly interrupted or got in the way of the answer or was clarifying his question. I don't remember exactly. But Phil Neville lost it and said that, you know, show some effing respect and let me finish my, you know, let me finish my answer. Then after he finishes the whole diatribe yelling at this young man, he goes, what was your question again?
Yeah, I believe it was, are you going to let me answer your question? And then he was like, yeah, what was the question? I mean, there was, you know, some big account, Twitter account in the UK, you know, it's Sports Bible or something. They just tweet out and said, just please stay tuned. Like, I promise the Phil Neville kicker is worth it here. You know, it was. It's an all-time great MLS press conference moment.
It's
you know,
a great moment. And yeah, when it goes viral in Europe, that's how you know you're on Mourinho level press conference.
Yeah.
You know, kind of virality and stuff like that. We need more of that, in my opinion. So that's why that's why I'm sad to see him go out of
MLS. I mean, if I'm real about my biggest thing with Miami is, you know, they're atrocious on the field. That like their roster needs to be blown up. But my bigger thing is like, I'm actually not worried about what they'll do if Messi comes because they will literally build. They'll hire a coach who Messi's dad probably will recommend. They will build an entire roster. I'm serious, by the way. They'll build an entire roster around him. So they'll be fine, right? Like, my bigger question for them is if he doesn't come. I mean, like, they have put so many eggs in this basket, dude, that, like, and there is, I just want to say this, like, there is, I want Messi here. I do. I'm selfishly, professionally, it's good for business. It's good for content. It's good for us just watching the game. There's this other huge part of me that just loves Schadenfreude and wants everyone to fail at everything. And that part is a very strong part of me that wants this to fail. And I just want him to take the bag into the Middle East to be like, you fucked it up, Miami. But at the end of the day, I hope he comes, right? But my, you know, if it doesn't work out, I'm just like, man, it's not like they can't turn around and like sign Mbappe or somebody. It's just like, there is no replacement. You know, it's like, I don't know what they're going to do, you know, like from a PR perspective.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, you know, we have our insider here at Meadowlark Media, obviously Michael Ryan Ruiz. I don't know if you've seen some of his tweets and his feud, I guess, with Fabrizio Romano.
What I'd describe as a blood feud or a death feud. Just quite a big day for confirming my stories. You see that one the other day? Yeah.
It's a great, you know, it's nice to have a resource like that on our end. But is there anything from, you know, we spoke to him at Nautism about it. But
I mean, he's a direct line to Miami ownership. You should find out why we got banned. Who did that? Who made that call?
That's a good question. You know, like, I will do my investigative reporting and find out for you. From the Athletics end, is there anything that we may not, you know, any detail? Or is it simply, you know, it's on Messi? Like, obviously, we've heard that the offer is there for him, whether he wants to take it or not. But what is the, I don't know, strong incentive for him to come to Major League Soccer? Like, does he care about changing sort of the face of American soccer and really doing that? Or does he want to just, like, go back to Barcelona, get some, you know, pats on the back and just end his career?
Yeah, I mean, that's the... I have several different thoughts on this. Felipe and I spent some time sort of like just talking about this at the bar, basically. I mean, like, there's no, you know, there's no real financial... I mean, you could say something like, you know, yeah, Miami, you know, I think it was reported the other day, and Lord knows what's true, but that, you know, it would be like you'd get like Adidas money and an ownership stake, which that much, the ownership share thing is definitely true, but like... You know, little things like that, and you know, I heard at some point that Miami might cut him in on the real estate around the stadium. I mean, they're getting the league in Miami; they're getting creative like that, right? But I mean, they're just not going to compete with the Middle East. I mean, like Al Hilal. I mean, they could just offer him $750 million, probably, if they wanted to, right?
They're like, here, take an oil refinery.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, like, if it's about money, not that Messi needs any more of it, but if it's about money. He's just going to go to the Middle East. Also, if I'm being real, like his life there can be very easy. You know what I mean? Like they can be like, we'll protect you and we'll keep you. You know, it's like we can take care of your family, all sort of stuff. Like,
yeah.
Less so, I feel like in the United States. I mean, if he comes to America, it does have to be the, you know, Clive Toy, the old commissioner and GM of the Cosmos, commissioner of the NASL, the guy who brought Pelé to America. I mean, that was his pitch to Pelé was, look, you won like everything there is in South America. You've won the World Cup multiple times. You come to the U.S. So if you go to Real Madrid, which is where he was thinking of going, you can win the European Cup. If you come to the NASL, you can win an entire country, right? And so like that, he very much has to want to do that. And I just don't know how much he cares. Which by the way, is fine. It's like he's an athlete. He's not some peace emissary or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah.
I mean, I'll watch wherever he goes. I mean, the other thing too is like. He's going to get, I mean, look at Ronaldo, man. I mean, he went Cristiano, he went to the Middle East. And I mean, I'm sorry, we all watch soccer all the time. And like, I'll see a highlight of him. He's invisible. You know what I mean? Like from a soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, perspective, he's invisible. I mean, if Messi comes to MLS, it's going to be like a media, you know, juggernaut, you know?
Right. And it'll just lead to, you know, because going to Saudi Arabia, it'll, like you said, they're generally forgotten. You know, they don't do the same numbers. ESPN FC tries to bring up Ronaldo, and people are like, why are you still talking about this? We don't really.
Nobody cares.
No one cares.
The whole segment of consumer that's happy he's over there, we don't have to see him anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there are very few people that are like, he joined my favorite club. Thank you.
Yeah, so exactly. My favorite club. Al Hilal, or whatever. Who does he play for over there? Who does he play for over there? I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Al-Nasser. Al-Nasser. That's who he
is. Okay, all right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think the Messi joining Major League Soccer, especially, you know, it's not obviously, I mean, Beckham joining Major League Soccer was a big deal.
This is the
equivalent of Pelé coming to NASL. Like,
yeah,
this is,
you look at where the league was back then too, and it was very much like Beckham coming here to this sort of fringe thing, and like MLS stuff. I mean, say whatever you want about it, I rag on it all the time, but I mean, like, it isn't a very different place now than it was in 2007. It does have some international respect and cachet, like, you know, this, it is a thing where it's like he's being plugged into like a league that's pretty competitive and physical, and you know, the quality isn't great, but I mean, it's not an easy place to play. We just talked to Felipe, I just talked to Cesc Fabregas for 30 minutes, little flex right there, this past weekend. Felipe, I just talked to Cesc Fabregas at the 77 tournament in North Carolina, which is a real sentence. Anyways, I asked him, I said, you know, we're like 25 minutes in an interview, I was kind of running out of questions. I was like, hey, and I I'm just curious if you ever considered coming to MLS. You're playing in Como and Serie B. And he said, honestly, no. You know, he said, I know the league. I watch it a lot, but it's a very physical league, and I wasn't looking for that kind of league at this stage in my career. Literally, yeah. Him saying, like, I wouldn't hack it here. Like, physically, it'd be difficult. So, you know, not that it's going to be a problem for Messi, but.
Right,
you know.
Right. I just can't. If he does, I want him to go to Miami just mm-hmm. for the barrage of angry tweets of people that are going to be forced to watch Major League Soccer after constantly, yeah. Bad-mouthing it and wasting all this energy with all this negativity.
I can't wait to see their commentary on Pessi's performance in Game 3 of the best of 8, playoff series that Inter Miami got into by being the 11 seed in the East or whatever.
That's what I need in my life. You know, if they get bumped out in the wild card, you know, it's just going to be Messi, Messi's finished.
Exactly. Like Messi threads a perfect ball through to, I don't know, a recently unretired Breck Shea who they hired as a forward. And, you know, Breck Shea, also a TST participant. Spent a bit of time talking to Breck Shea and Jeff Cameron, actually. That. Still can't figure out what their business is that they're starting.
Oh sure, yeah, yeah. No idea. I mean, yeah. I'm sure they're getting into lobbying for some sort of Republican.
Exactly.
Super PAC.
Come on, man.
I don't know
what Breck's politics are. I just know he's from Florida and owns an assault rifle.
Okay, I mean, I've seen photos of him holding a machine gun. That's all I know. Yeah. I don't know where he lies on what we should do with these books that show two penguins kissing.
Holding a machine gun. I love the. This is gonna leave. Every time I say something like that on Twitter, there's always one person who's like, "Machine gun isn't even the word for that. That's not even an assault rifle." And I'm just like, "Bro, I need to get you on a watch list." You know what I mean? Like. This is what you chose to tweet at me is the semantics of the gun that this person is holding. You know, Jesus, dude.
Well, good. Obviously you were in North Carolina. It was a very hot time there. We were talking about it before. So I know that you could have used a nice cold Coors Light to chill that weekend. That's what we do on this show, bro. All right, when the mountains are blue right on the can, that tells you all you need to know. You know that it is absolutely ready. It is time to kick back, watch some TST, and chill and watch MLS legends like Nick Raimondo in goal. You know what I'm saying, Pablo?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you saw Luis Robles, his eye situation. Could have used a nice cool Coors Light. The medical tent at the facility, kind of suspect in quality. If they had a cooler Coors Light, maybe take some of that swelling down, take the edge off. You know what I mean?
Right.
The physio pulls the can out. It's cold. In a space.
Okay. That man went to medical school for 15 years to learn that technique. Okay.
Yeah. I just took half the money from this ad read, by the way. That was cool.
Thank you so much for participating. So when you choose to chill, pay your plans with an ice cold Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligans. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Let's go.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.
There it is. If you want to chill like Lionel Messi in Inter Miami's midfield in 2029, here's the other thing about Messi, is that this is the thing, and I told Felipe this. Like, he doesn't have to pick. He can literally go there for 2 years, and you think Miami's not going to take him at 39 for a year? He'd still get the ownership stake. It's like, come on, dude. This guy is going to be desirable until he dies, probably, to team. You know, like
very much so. All right. Let's move on to CCL. The CCL final happened. Leon are champions of CONCACAF. They
vamos fuera MLS. Otra vez.
Afuera.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, they won 3-1 on aggregate. It was look, I think a lot of people thought Leon were the underdog. Yeah. And
Timothy Tillman definitely did.
Yeah, yeah. They did not they did not look like that at all. I mean, in the first leg, you figure at home they they're going to do what they're going to do. And like every MLS team kind of struggles when they're on the road in Mexico. But no, even away, and then you could also kind of argue it still felt like a bit of a home game for Leon as well.
For sure.
at BMO Stadium. But the LAFC really couldn't, not that they couldn't figure it out per se, but they just, it wasn't enough. I mean, these matches usually against the Liga MX side, I don't know what it is. There was a comment from Timothy Tillman who before the game where he was just like, "Oh, Liga MX, there's no real tactics or whatever. It's all like vibes out there." And they hit him with vibes and tactics.
There was a vibes for sure. I mean, it's a classic LAFC just not finishing their chances, man. I mean, they controlled long stretches of that game. It doesn't matter. I mean, all these CCL home and away ties that all kind of play out the same way in the second game. It's like hesitant for the, it's like sort of like hesitant for the first 20 minutes. Minutes 20 through 70 are just insane, up and down, up and down. And then the game just gets completely destroyed in the last 20 minutes, right? And it's exactly what happened, you know? And also, I mean, look, I don't love singling players out, but I mean the goal John McCarthy let in was a total howler. I mean that's a game changer, obviously. You know, stretches the field, and you know, to give up a goal that early, and I don't know. I mean, again, to me, it's one of those things where MLS has won CCL once in the modern era. We'll say, I mean, they've won other iterations of it in the '90s, but I bristled when Seattle wins it, and it becomes like a, you know, a thing where it's like we finally broke through and MLS is better. It's like, no, it's like 1-20 now. Yeah, I'm not saying that you have to like even that playing field before, you know, you're conclusively sort of the favorite in that tournament, but you got to run off 2 or 3 in a row, you know?
Right.
And LAFC, dude, they didn't come up against anybody from Liga MX on their way to the game. And honestly, this is their first taste of it. And Twitter's full of people who are like, MLS will never be competitive until they loosen roster restrictions. And, you know, and there's differences, obviously. You know, LAFC can spend money wherever they want on their roster. Not LAFC, sorry, Liga MX team.
Liga MX,
LAFC obviously is just going to have the salary cap BS plus their DPs. They still spend way more money than Leon. I mean, like, I don't want to hear a team that's had Vela, Chiellini, all these players, you know, in the past year or two whine about spending, you know? So you got outplayed, man. Just get over it.
Yeah, I guess leading up to the game, it felt like this LAFC team was better than the Sounders team that won last year, and the general feeling I have whenever I'm watching an MLS team against a Liga MX team is just like you see the difference in quality within the first 15 seconds where every player on a Liga MX team is so technically sound and so generally pretty confident, especially the teams that are in Champions League. I mean, not every Liga MX team is great necessarily, but that's just one of the top teams in MLS versus the top teams in Liga MX. The rosters are constructed obviously differently because there's no salary cap in Liga MX, but the thing you see so immediately is just the confidence in their own ability. So it was disappointing. A lot of time there are some people that are like when an MLS team is in the final, It's you know, Rob Lowe wearing the hat, and we're just rooting for the league. They obviously LA Galaxy fans were very happy that didn't work out. Yeah. But I want to I'm thinking about this because I haven't got a chance to talk to you about it, but all the drama with that you've been seeing, obviously Chris Klein got fired, but all the drama that you've been seeing with fans are like kind of voicing their opinions with the players. We saw with LA Galaxy, we saw with NYCFC. I spoke to Alexis about it last week, but I just want to get your take on the fact that you've been covering MLS a long time, and now we're getting to the point where we're like the Milan Ultras, right? The AC Milan Ultras, where they are, you know, having conversation with the player, letting them know, hey, you know what? I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. You know, they're doing the whole thing.
Right.
But what do you think of MLS fans getting to this point?
I don't think it does anybody any good. I think MLS clubs are in a tricky situation because let's take the Chris Klein thing, for example, in retrospect. I mean, fans can boycott, right? But like the Galaxy was never going to fire him. You know, like, in fact, if the Galaxy were even a mediocre team right now, he'd still have his job. They were never going to fire him because fans told them to do that. It just sets a stupid precedent. I also think the, like, you know, Herc sort of went off on this the other night. Like, the whole, like, standing there and, like, listening to, like, an open dialogue from your supporters is, like, an interesting move, but I doubt any of them had anything constructive to say. I mean, do you just stand there and listen to people be like, you suck, get better, you know, like you're, you know. I also think it's like, maybe I'm being a little too player friendly here, but like, you work around those guys for long enough and you realize that like, in a season like this, like I covered DC United in 2013, right? And it was like the worst, literally the worst season in MLS history a team ever had. Although Cincinnati might want a word with that as far as, you know, but like, as far as like any one of their first three seasons. But, you know, like those dudes were miserable every day. Like they didn't need like some shirtless dude on a capo stand, whatever, to yell at him, be like, I'm really disappointed in you, you know, like. Like, you know, I don't know. It just felt
like I want you to try harder. They're like, when have you seen your kids? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Also, if I'm being real, man, I don't want MLS to become that league. I don't want MLS to become that league that has a sort of like toxic fan culture where players are expected to do X, Y, and Z thing. To me, it's just like, that's one of the things I like about it, you know? I mean, I'm a big TST guy now anyway, so it doesn't really matter. And I do think this will be, the league will change fundamentally when TST buys out MLS in 3 or 4 years. So, you know, like, I don't think it's going to matter very much, but, you know. Okay.
Yeah, we shouldn't be too hard-pressed about it now because obviously the wave of TST is coming, so there's nothing we can do about that.
This is now my second favorite ball that I have in here, I think.
What's the other one? Yeah, Pablo always has
a match ball from 1977 NASL, and incredible. So the problem, the bladder, you can almost hear it. The bladder detached from the inside of it, so I can't inflate it. But you know the guy on TikTok who does all those custom balls. I think it's John Paul's balls, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's apparently going to open this thing up and put a new bladder in it.
So, oh, amazing. That's so cool.
Stay tuned for that collab content opportunity.
Can't wait to see that. Pablo going the influencer route is going to be great.
Christian, can I ask you something, man?
Go for it, man.
Has Alexis changed since he started hanging out with Thierry Henry or whatever?
Yeah, Alexis has changed a little bit, but mostly because he has a 5 a.m. call time every day. His life has changed dramatically in a way that I don't think he exactly wants. It's a little challenging. Right. You know, I think the fatigue that hits around 2-3 p.m. when you're like, oh man, there's still a lot of day left and I got to go to bed for work the next day.
Way too old for that, man. Yeah.
So that's the main challenge. But yeah, he is, you know, he's homies with Thierry Henry. I think the fun part, my favorite thing about Morning Footy has generally been because I've dealt with Alexis for nearly a decade, right? Yeah. I know what he's like. I know what to expect. Yeah.
Not known, but, you've dealt with. Yeah, all right.
The shock on the rest of the panel's faces with some of the things Alexis says, whether it's a terrible soccer opinion or just a joke that is like proper for this show but not proper for that show, and there's a lot of you know Charlie Davies being absolutely shocked and startled with everything. Yeah, it's just Alexis is you know, he's an acquired taste.
He's yeah, yeah, exactly. Getting used right. to him. Still working on that.
Pablo, thank you so much. This has been great. I just wanted to do a couple quick things. You mentioned FC Cincinnati. Uh-huh. They are leading the supporter shield, but they were a punchline for every single year. They were basically in MLS, especially those first 3 years. But what have you made of this turnaround? I just obviously saw them against, they played NYCFC against in Open Cup. They played them in MLS. They're just an incredibly strong team. How did they turn this around so quickly?
Funny you should ask. I wrote an entire feature on this a couple weeks ago on The Athletic, which I encourage people to go read. But the short version, which Christian is now forcing me to pull in front of the paywall for no reason, is that, it comes down to Chris Albright and Pat Noonan, I think, because I think people look at the team, for example, that Cincy had in 2021 and 2022 last year when they did make the playoffs for the first time. There's still a lot of pieces there from those two teams. The 2021 team was arguably the worst in league history. 2022, obviously, they improved, but they didn't light anything on fire, you know. This team, I mean, you have Chris Albright, obviously, they bring in from Philadelphia. He was instrumental to that team's identity building and success, roster building. And Pat Noonan, who was Jim Curtin's assistant in Philadelphia, who worked with Albright prior, has, you know, for a long time, it's like you'll hear as a reporter, you know, you'll talk to an MLS head coach or a player or something like that. They'll just randomly bring up, you know, Pat Noonan was randomly brought up. It was, you know, it was like, look, man, this guy's an assistant, but he knows his shit, you know. Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of only a matter of time before he got a head coaching job, and he's done really well. You know, he's like a no-nonsense dude. Super honest with players. The players like him a lot. I think the unheralded probably part of their success, the part nobody talks about, is their staff of assistants. They have Dom Kinnear, who's won 2 MLS Cups and who at the Galaxy was like the Zlatan whisperer. You know, I did a Zlatan story years ago where somebody told me that he was like the only person at the Galaxy that Zlatan respected. You know, he was like the Zlatan whisperer, and he works with their strikers now. They have.
You mean he didn't respect Perry Kitchen, aka Romney, Kevin,
aka Kevin. God damn, man. Just that remains like an all-time MLS banger, the Kitchen thing. Reporting that story, we talked to, like, me and Matt Pence talked to like 20 people, and no less than a dozen of them were like, have you heard about the Kevin thing? Yeah, so, you know, I think that, the coaching, I think the, you know, they also, like, Noonan, I think, has an understanding of how to deal with, let's say, a player like Lucio Acosta, who's a brilliant player, but who, I'm going to say he's a little misunderstood. You know, Ben Olsen in D.C. had a tough time dealing with him. Pat, I think, gives him a pretty long leash, right? The club dealt with the Brenner stuff as best as possible. There's a lot of nonsense that went on there that people didn't see. You know, and they seem to have at least minimized their financial loss there and then kind of move on from it. So it's pretty comprehensive, man. I mean, I know Felipe and I both have been pretty impressed by their setup right now. So I think they have a real chance to, I mean, I think if I had to, you nailed me down, and I think they're going to win the Supporters Shield, obviously, but I also think they have a real chance to do the double for sure.
Yeah, they look incredibly sharp. It's like, we're getting to a point where the MLS is obviously there's so many teams, right? I was just talking to
some people would say too many.
yeah, it's like it's hard to just sort of just manage in your mind to keep track of obviously so many games. But the cool thing about this league is that you can within a few years you can have an FC Cincinnati be a wooden spoon winner and then into Portershield in almost no time. So, it's becoming one of the places. I haven't gone to TQL Stadium yet to see a game, and it's making me want to go and check out a game day even more.
I mean, I think Pat Noonan told me kind of, you know, the end of our conversation off the record was like, man, you got to get down here for a game. There's something in the water. And I was like, oh, it's Cincinnati. There's a lot of stuff in the water down there. That's arsenic.
Some train derailed.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of stuff in the water there, buddy. It's Ohio.
Real quick, this is my last thing. I just want to
be. That was a cheap shot. Shout out to Ohio. You guys are great. Whatever. You know.
No, hopefully they take care of those situations. Okay.
Yeah.
The last thing, Zlatan announced his retirement from professional football, and obviously we remember his time in Major League Soccer, which was pretty remarkable. Obviously, not too long ago. Any favorite outside of the Kevin stuff? Is anything comes to mind that you appreciated of Zlatan's time here?
I mean, I always found his shtick a little grating, but I thought. I mean, I can tell you this much. I mean, two things, probably. First of all, just that first goal he scored was the only time, literally, in the past 10 years that I was just watching that game with a friend on their couch, and I screamed. I mean, I literally, like, I remember getting off his couch, yelling, and jumping over his couch. Like, just in absolute, like, it was just the most, like, MLS will never top that moment. As far as just somebody delivering and a huge, I mean, it just had all the, you know, it's like ticked all the boxes, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote the story. It was like Dom Kinnear, Zlatan, before he submitted that game, had come up to Kinnear and said the keeper's playing way off his line. I mean, he was like, he knew exactly what he was doing on his first touch, you know. I mean, the other thing, he just was like, the guy just had such a presence, man. I mean, I only interviewed him once, and it was in D.C., and it was like, every answer he gave me to every question was just like, made me shiver and fear or something like that. You know what I mean? I don't know how else to put that. I mean, I said like, it was all very turned around on me. They played on a terrible field because I think the XFL team had just finished their season. It was horrible. And I was like, you know, what do you think of the quality of the pitches here in the States? I mean, this is pretty bad. He's you know, he'd say something like, you have eyes. Why are you asking me this? Like, all right, dude, just help me out, okay? I just got this job at The Athletic. Just give me something here, you know?
Can
like,
I quote you there? Is that the quote you're going
to
put?
You know, I'm but I'm pretty much still a mechanic, you know? So just – but no, I mean, he's fantastic for the league, obviously. And his level is just – it was insane. You know?
Yeah.
But,
he just had so many – my favorite moments were – when they lost in the playoff in El Tráfico, Alexis and I were there, and we were filming them going back into the locker room.
Were you the guy he grabbed his junk at?
Yeah, he grabbed his nuts, and that was our.
Yeah.
Literally, we got the video, and 433 was like, "Hey, can we share that?" And we're like, "Yeah, 433, happy to give that." To
right.
Tag us, bro. That. And then the one where the Montreal player, I think his name was Michael Petrasso, if I'm not mistaken, he stepped on his foot and he smacked him.
Incredible.
Smacked him in the head, got a red card for
it. Yeah, just like toppled over or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely legendary.
Legendary player. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad we got to kind of experience that in person as well. He's an unbelievable player. So, Pablo Maurer, thank you so much for joining me, man. This is really, really dope. Thank you for covering for Alexis Guerreros, who's on his way to Istanbul, doing whatever he has to do out there. Make sure everybody go follow Pablo and please plug anything you want to plug, Pablo. This is your chance.
I just want to make sure we get you at the TST 2.0 next. We're already thinking about this. I've already got the beat on lock, and you guys can do some video content. We go from there. Maybe we just enter a team.
That's an odd. We got cool. We got me, team. We got a team you, of all Felipe, comedians.
Alexis. That can play. I mean, who else can we loop in on this? You know, we need three more players other than me, you, Alexis, and Felipe. You know.
Well, yeah, I played with Felipe. Felipe was very good. Didn't he play in college or something? Yeah.
He will never let you forget how good he is.
Yeah.
I hear Alexis is boys with his former Arsenal legend. I don't know if you can look it up. You know, like.
Yeah, will he lace him up again? We don't know. We got to ask him. This is the one thing I learned from Felipe, from playing in a media game It wasn't really a media game, but it was like I forgot who put the game together, but this was in Orlando during Orlando MLS All-Star. Yeah. Felipe does this great thing where he can perfectly shield the ball with his body, and he's not like a big dude at all, but he just knows exactly where to place his body so that you have no access to the ball. So if he's dribbling forward, if dribbling towards you, if you're on his side, he will make sure he will position a limb or something anywhere around you so that you can't get it. And I'm like,
he will do all of that just to make sure he doesn't have to pass to his teammate. You know? Protect the ball at all costs so that then you can dribble it over the end line or just shoot it 4 feet over the goal.
The team has 12% possession, but Felipe got like 98.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Pablo Maurer, everybody go follow on Twitter, obviously, at MLSist, a legend in covering American soccer. Get a subscription to The Athletic to read his articles. He does some amazing work. If you want a deep dive on the water fountain that Landon Donovan was drinking out of in North Carolina, Pablo is your guy. I'm serious. He just does incredible work. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you very, very much, man. And to everybody else, thank you so much for hanging out. We'll be back on Thursday. We got another guest host lined up, and we'll be talking about Champions League final that's happening, obviously, this weekend. So, everybody, thanks so much. Peace.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.